Now, earlier this week, President Biden released a plan focused on families and children called the American Families Plan. It would spend $1.8 trillion over the next 10 years. The proposal would establish universal free preschool, increase existing child tax credits, and give child care assistance to low and middle income families. You can join in with your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. Do you have school-age kids or younger kids? What would be helpful for you in managing your work life with kids at home? Do you need more access to daycare? Is there daycare to be had that you can afford where you live? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Catherine Magnuson is a professor of social work and director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. Her research focuses on economically disadvantaged children and their families. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
I gave just a couple of details there. Can you tell us more about what you're seeing in this Biden plan for family and child care that's going to affect us here in Wisconsin?
You know, this is a really exciting plan for those of us that are looking out for the well-being of middle-income and low-income families. So this is the way we're describing it is a once-in-a-generation investment to really solidify the gains that middle-class families need to get by. One of the things that's happened in the past 30 years is that wages haven't kept pace with inflation at the middle and the low end of the wage distribution. And that has brought a lot of families to have two working parents, right? So 60% of moms are now also working in addition to having a working partner or father in the household. You got two working parents, you need help with those kids. And so having both access to paid maternity and paternity leave, parental leave, having access to affordable and quality childcare. So you're both comfortable with where you're leaving your kids and you can afford to pay for it. And in Wisconsin, that's huge. So paying for a center-based infant care full-time costs you $12,000. Our median income is $60,000. So who can afford to put that much money into childcare when you're still trying to pay your mortgage, your rent, and put food on the table? In addition, this is going to expand universal pre-kindergarten. We've done really well in this state, so upwards of about 80% of our kids are in 4K already. But this is going to enable younger kids to get into 4K and move part-day programs to full-day programs. So for working families in Wisconsin, this this investment has a lot to offer in terms of helping communities and families care for their children and still get out there and be able to work.
Can you talk about the current state of child care access in communities around the state? Aside from the dollar amount it's going to cost, are there places where people don't really have a lot of options?
There are, and we know this, and it tends to be in the less urban areas. So definitely there are counties and areas and communities in our state where even if you had all the money in the world, you'd have a really hard time finding a place that you wanted to put your child in for childcare. And we know that. And there's barriers to entrance, and it's not a cheap thing to do. No one's getting rich on childcare, but the costs of providing the service are real. And so, you know, businesses have not in childcare in Wisconsin has not been invested in heavily by our own state. So some other states use things like cigarette tax. California got a lot of money poured into early childhood by using these types of taxes. But Wisconsin hasn't put large amounts of general revenue and hasn't found any other creative way to help these essential workers and essential services that parents need. So absolutely, particularly in the rural areas of our state, you might not even be able to find childcare if you wanted it.
Looking at the dollar amounts involved, the amount of federal expenditure, people might look at this and say, okay, yeah, these sound like nice goals to have, but is it worth the amount of money we're talking about putting it into it here? What would you say to that question?
Oh, I think it's absolutely worth it. I mean, what we do now is leave parents to figure out this on their own. And so either they're choosing not to work, so we're leaving qualified, highly skilled workers, you know, at home caring for their kids. And many people choose that, and that's wonderful. But we're simply at a breaking point. We can't have people out and working outside of the home, which is what our industry wants. We want highly skilled workers, and have kids with no one to care for them. So I think we're really at a point where we need a major investment, and we need communities to be able to support those working families so that their kids are safe. And it's an important age in development. Young children really do need high quality care and attention so that they're ready when they get to school. And honestly, I can't think of a better investment in families at this point in our country's history than to recognize what many other countries have figured out, which is we need healthy working low-income and middle-income families. And to make that happen, we need to, as communities, come together and put the resources into childcare, early education, and paid family leave.
We're talking to Catherine Magnuson, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison, looking at the Biden administration's proposals on childcare funding and family leave. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on Biden's proposal to spend about $1.8 trillion over a decade aimed at children and families? Do you want to see federally required family medical leave and family leave? Do you want to see this investment in childcare? Have you been in a position in your life as a parent, maybe, where you had to weigh the benefits of working and the costs of childcare, and maybe working didn't make sense given how much you'd have to pay for childcare? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farad. Right now we're picking up our conversation with Catherine Magnuson, professor of social work and director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. We're talking about President Biden's proposal to spend nearly $2 trillion in the next decade on child care, tax credits, and other issues relevant to families. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Catherine, I mentioned tax credits, and we've talked on the show recently about this, the idea of extending tax credits without work requirements, the earned income tax credit for many families. Is that something you have your eye on? And if so, what do you think the impact of that could be?
Yeah, well, we know nationally, absolutely. It's a big, bold plan that says we know kids are expensive to care for, and so we're going to help parents through the tax system have more resources to care for their kids. So, you know, the estimate suggests that nationally this is going to reduce child poverty by up to 50%. And that's the biggest dent, you know, that we've made in child poverty in at least 50 years. So that's really exciting and really important. I think, you know, our country has really emphasized in-kind benefits, so providing health insurance or child care subsidies or food stamps in the form of food share benefits. But the reality is there's a lot of things that families need to buy. Diapers, for example, right? Diapers are expensive. Formula is expensive. Some of this stuff you can't get through other benefits. So we think it's really important that families have a basic amount of money that they can use to help care for their kids. And we're excited that I'm excited that that's part of Biden's plan to help support parents. It's universal, so everyone gets the tax credit. But we think it's really going to be particularly useful for those who are struggling to make ends meet. And we've definitely seen in the pandemic that not all, you know, through no fault of your own, people aren't always able to work, right? Things happen. And sometimes it's because someone gets sick, and other times it's because an entire, you know, world gets sick with a pandemic. But we can't just assume that every person who wants to work is able to work. There's things that happen. And so providing just a really minimal basic amount of resources that parents can use for their kids is a great strategy to making sure that kids don't fall through the cracks when someone hits a hard economic time.
You mentioned that the plan includes federal family leave requirements. What is on the table in this proposal?
What I read is that they're looking to find a way to provide 12 weeks of paid leave to parents, which, you know, seems really reasonable, I think, to a lot of people who maybe get that otherwise from their employers. But it's not required for all employers. And as someone who didn't have access to that, I think it's a really incredibly important thing. It helps parents bond with their children. It allows them to heal from childbirth. And it also improves their health and gets women back into the labor market, right? So it provides that needed support so that families can get through a really tumultuous, wonderful, joyful, but challenging time sometimes for families right after that child is born.
Is there a sense of how many people out there have some kind of family leave through their business or maybe through local requirements?
Gosh, I'll be honest, I don't know, but I do know the type of people that have access to it. And frankly, it's salaried workers, it's high income workers are those that are, you know, maybe they're working for Google or Microsoft or some of the bigger companies who do that as a benefit to attract, you know, bright talent. So many lower income working class folks simply don't have access to it. And they're probably the people that have the least amount of savings, right? So can have a harder time weathering that period where money's not coming in. So really extending it is going to do a great service, again, to middle and lower working class folks who don't have a large savings account and whose businesses or whose workplaces don't provide them with that benefit.
And for the universal pre-K you were talking about earlier, what do we know about the impact that can have on educational outcomes for kids?
Yeah, this is one of the areas where we're really glad. So, and many states have some form of pre-K, not always universal, but some funding for it. There's just an incredibly strong literature that says, and I've contributed to it myself, but it's across multiple states, multiple, you know, historical points in time, that suggests that kids that have a year or two of a pre-kindergarten experience enter kindergarten better ready to learn. So they have higher academic skills, better early math, better early reading skills. In some instances, not all of the studies, but a good number of the studies show that those improvements maintain themselves over time. So kids have lower levels of absences, they're doing better in later grades, they're more attached to school. And it's something that is continuing to be studied, but the evidence is just really clear that that year before kindergarten or a year or two before kindergarten can be really beneficial in terms of setting kids up on the right track. Now, good preschools can do that, or good child care centers can do that too. And we don't want 3 and 4 year olds to be treated like third graders, right? It really needs to be developmentally appropriate. They need well-paid teachers. You know, it needs to be a really high quality experience for those positive impacts. But we've seen it time and time again where getting kids into that type of setting can be really beneficial for them in the long run if it's a good quality setting.
Let's bring out a caller now. Michael is with us in La Crosse. Michael, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Great topic. As a father of 2-year-old twins, going into it, my wife and I had to look at this, and it just was not financially an option. We looked at her wages and mine, and she made the choice to stay home because it was going to cost well over $1,600 a month, possibly
yep.
$2,000. And so I applaud heartily the president taking on this issue, which just seems like a no-brainer that both sides of the aisles can agree on. It's like, okay, this is something that affects families very much. I mean, I'm thankful I live in a very urban area where we have a lot of, I'm a public school teacher, and I'm thankful that, you know, we have things like WIC. We use that. There's all sorts of diaper banks that we use those. Because this stuff is expensive.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Just a minute or so left. Thank you for calling in, Michael. Catherine, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot about having one young kid, but the minute you have two, the math just doubles. I mean, you're looking at spending $24,000 a year so that, you know, just on childcare if you're paying out of pocket. It's not the case that people aren't going to pay anything, right? So he's trying to cap it at 7% of household income. Up to folks in Wisconsin would be making about $90,000, would still be paying only $7,000, but paying $5,000 rather than, you know, $24,000 seems like, I agree, a no-brainer. The other point I want to quickly make is that these people that are caring for our children earn very low wages, right? Because they're earning as much as parents can afford to pay right now. They, on average, earn between $11 and $13 an hour, right? And just think about that. Here, You go to local Whole Foods and you can make $15 an hour. They're all great people, but everyone deserves to be making $15 an hour or a living wage. So a key part of this is not being able to pay childcare workers higher wages so that they can provide high quality care. They don't leave the field and it's not constant turnover. And if you pay them more, then we get overall better quality care. And parents, the key is parents don't have to fit the bill for those higher wages. So it's a really smart approach. It's got multiple prongs, and it's going to do a lot to support working families.
Catherine, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Magnuson, professor of social work, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison, joining us for a look at childcare and other family-related proposals from the White House. Coming up, it's Food Friday. We'll talk to a cooking instructor from Wisconsin about how to get kids involved in the kitchen. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday, and this week we're talking about cooking with our kids. Learning to cook can be a great hands-on experience for children, one that many of us might remember from our own childhood. And our guest says you can do it with surprisingly healthy food. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten your kids involved in the kitchen? What are some of their favorite things to make and or help out with? What advice do you have for other parents for cooking with their children? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tara Verma is a Madison-based cooking instructor and the owner of Yummy Sprout, which offers classes for kids and parents on cooking and healthy food. Tara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've worked with a lot of kids, Tara, including your own, I think. Can you talk about why it's such a great learning experience to get kids involved in cooking?
Absolutely. And yes, I have definitely cooked a ton with my own kids as well as thousands of kids. I think it's such a great thing to do because it really helps kids connect to their food and sort of a very meaningful way for them to learn how it sort of nourishes their body.
I've got teenagers. They can cook a full meal by themselves, but start at the earliest ages. When can we get kids involved? What are the first things they could start to help out with?
You can absolutely get kids involved at a very young age. From the time they're toddlers. I mean, definitely when they're a baby, you're already sort of modeling that behavior. But when they're toddlers, they can be helping you wash and scrub the vegetables, juicing lemons. We do cooking classes for kids as young as two. So I really feel that you can start really young with sort of those basic tasks and get them really excited about helping in the kitchen.
You've done a lot of in-person cooking classes with parents and kids over the years. How have you handled this last year with virtual training? How has that worked out?
That has definitely been a major, major shift for us, but we have done a lot of virtual classes. We've been doing virtual classes sort of the entire year. We shifted some of our classes that we do at area preschools to virtual, and then sometimes we're outside. So we've had a good mix of things. And we actually have a family cooking class, a virtual family cooking class coming up next month. And that's been really fun because we can kind of see everybody in their own kitchens and we're all sort of cooking together. So it's actually been a great experience.
I know you're not just interested in cooking with kids, but also in making healthy food with them. Can you talk about why that's been a focus for you?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was first sort of creating this business, I really didn't see much in that area. All of the stuff that was cooking for kids was really geared towards sort of like things that people sort of thought kids like, which was all, you know, junk food, which there's a time and a place, you know, for that for sure. But I really wanted to give sort of the idea that healthy food could be fun. And one thing I've definitely learned over the years is that kids actually love healthy food. I have run into just as many kids who like vegetables that like chocolate. You know, you can never predict what kids are going to like. Everyone's very different. But kids actually love healthy food.
Is there something about helping make the food themselves that gets a little more buy-in from kids to maybe try that healthier stuff that if, I just plopped it down in front of them, they might not go for?
Oh, absolutely. 10 out of 10 on that one. Kids are way more likely to try a food if they're involved in cooking it, if they're involved in even deciding what to make. You know, they can help you meal plan and pick recipes. And they really can express their creativity in cooking. I think that's what's so great for them, to get that pride. They're so proud of what they created that it's hard for them not to at least try it.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Tara Verma, owner of Madison-based Yummy Sprout, where she and other instructors teach classes for kids and parents on cooking and on, as we heard, healthy foods. You shared a recipe with us, Tara. I guess this one's kind of a big hit. It's a cherry berry smoothie bowl. We've got it up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Tell us a little bit about this smoothie bowl, please.
Absolutely. This is one that, well, my girls, they absolutely adore it. But then also lots of cooking classes that we've done. And I love it because there is so much room for creativity. And it's super easy. You make a smoothie, and then instead of just drinking it from a cup, you put it in a bowl and let them really decorate the top, almost like an art project. And you can give them, you know, healthy things to choose from, fruit, chocolate chips, even coconut. Really, the creativity there, the possibilities are kind of endless. And they really have fun decorating it. And then most kids, you know, gobble it up and you've got this bowl of smoothie.
And you mentioned there a couple times creativity and the visual look of it. Is this a place where kids can kind of really run wild and have fun with cooking?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a big part. If it's building life skills for your future. And so if they have fun and it's creative to them, it gives them that positive relationship with it. And so later on in your life, when you have to cook to survive, to feed yourself, it's such a great life skill to sort of learn in that positive way when you're young.
There's a lot of different levels of cooking. And with kids, of course, thinking about, okay, we've got some hot things going on, some knives. You know, I'm still a little scared of our food processor. Talk about safety and getting kids into those types of cooking a little more safely.
Absolutely. That's a really big concern for parents, is safety. You know, they're sort of like not sure where to start. I think getting your kids started on some of those things you might be scared of young in a safe way is really helpful. You can get kid-safe knives. They sell them a lot of different places. We have some on yummysprout.com as well. And they're plastic, but they're serrated, so they will do a fairly good job of cutting most things. But they're a lot safer than maybe some of the knives you have in your kitchen that you don't want to just hand over to your three-year-old. But getting them cutting, you know, really young and practicing those skills will really help them gain confidence, and it'll help you be a lot less scared of letting them try those things out.
It's spring. We're getting the earliest glimmerings of spring produce, and the summer is coming, of course. Tara, what are some of the, you know, seasonal things that we see that have been big hits with the kids you've worked with over the years?
I would say for sure, as we're getting into spring and summer, one thing that kids love making is pickles. You can pickle almost any vegetable. So if you have stuff growing in your garden, you know, a lot of times we'll do it with cucumbers, but you can really pickle most vegetables. And it's super easy to make a quick little brine with honey and vinegar, and, you know, they'll stay in a jar in the fridge for a few days. Kids love making them. And I've had so many kids try the pickles that were not big on pickles just because they were so proud that they made these pickles. Jam is another great one. Vegetable soup is another great one.
Yeah, vegetable soup. You told our producer that is a pretty big hit with kids for making and then theoretically eating. Why has that been so appealing to the kids you've worked with?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not sure the magic formula of it, but the very first time we made it at a camp, this was probably 6 or 7 years ago, I kind of was like, I don't know if this is going to go over, but let's try it. And I was shocked at how many kids, not only did they love making it, all the different chopping elements, really actually loved and ate the soup. And I was like, I thought like all those vegetables together might be scary. But and since then, it has been such a huge hit. Kids really love vegetable soup, and they're, I think, so much more likely to try it if they make it than if they eat it from a can.
Now, you're teaching kids a lot of your own recipes, but have you found great references that you'd point people toward, whether that's a cookbook that's kid-friendly or websites or wherever you might point people to?
Absolutely. Well, we have a lot of recipes on our website too, but there's a lot of great websites out there that, you know, we love to use for inspiration. And there's also a lot of great cookbooks for kids. One website I'll mention is Wealicious. That's a great one. They have tons of kid-friendly recipes. But you don't feel like you need to get a kid cookbook, while there are some really great ones, any cookbook you have in your kitchen, surprisingly, if you let your kids look through that, even if they can't quite read yet, they might see some pictures they like. Or if they can read, you know, I've given my daughters my cookbooks and just a stack of Post-its, and they'll just go through and tag all the recipes that they're excited to try. And that in itself can really get kids inspired to cook.
And your website is yummysprout.com. Do I remember that right?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Now, can you give us leave us with a final pep talk, Tara, as we head into the late spring and summer for parents to get their kids cooking alongside them?
Absolutely. A little pep talk. It is really beneficial. I know it can be scary for parents because it can be kind of messy and you kind of have to be prepared for a little bit of mess, but it's such a great thing to do for your kids. And it's a great bonding thing for you to do with your kids, because instead of becoming, oh, making dinner is this chore and this task you have to do, it becomes a chance to make memories with your kids and to really have that sort of bond. So my advice is, don't wait for special occasions to cook. Cook on a Tuesday night. Cook whenever you get a chance with your kids.
Tara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tara Verma is the owner of Yummy Sprout, a Madison-based company offering cooking classes for kids and parents. You can find the recipe she shared for a cherry berry smoothie bowl at wpr.org/foodfriday. You could find more recipes at her website. Again, that's yummysprout.com. Coming up, President Biden wants to pay for his agenda in part by stepping up IRS enforcement against corporations and wealthier Americans. We'll talk to a business reporter who's been following this issue over the years about how realistic that is after years of budget cuts at the IRS.